other vegetables. Artichokes, asparagus, beets, bell peppers, carrots, corn, garlic, mushrooms like button, oyster, portobello, and shiitake. Okra, onions, purple potatoes, pumpkins, sea vegetables such as arame, dulse, nori, snap peas, squash like delicata, summer spaghetti squash varieties, sweet potatoes or yams, tomatoes, and zucchini. The serving size is 1 cup of raw leafy vegetables, a half a cup of raw or cooked non-leafy vegetables, a half a cup of vegetable juice, or a quarter cup of dried mushrooms. My daily recommendation is these 2 servings of additional other vegetables a day. The Mammoth Global Burden of Disease Study identified the typical American diet as the primary cause of Americans' death and disability, and inadequate vegetable intake as our 5th leading dietary risk factor, nearly as bad as our consumption of processed meat. The Union of Concerned Scientists estimated that if the nation increases consumption of fruits and veggies to meet the dietary guidelines, we might save the lives of more than 100,000 people each year. We should eat fruits and vegetables as if our lives depended on it, because, guess what? Maybe it does. Garden variety, diversifying your vegetable portfolio. Perhaps the least controversial advice in all of nutrition is to eat more fruits and vegetables, which is to say, eat more plants, since the term vegetable basically just means all parts of the plant that aren't fruit. There are root vegetables like sweet potatoes, stem vegetables like rhubarb, pod vegetables like peas, even flower vegetables like broccoli. It's not called cauliflower for nothing. We've already talked about the leaf vegetables in the green section. If dark green leafy vegetables are the healthiest foods around, then why branch out to other parts of the plant? Pun intended. Yes, you're supposed to eat the rainbow, but didn't we just learn that green leaves have an entire spectrum of colors hidden inside? Unlike more generic compounds like vitamin C, which is broadly available in various fruits and vegetables, other nutrients are not so evenly distributed. Just as certain fruits like citrus offer unique non-pigment phytonutrients not found in other fruits, different vegetables contribute different compounds. White cauliflower, lacking antioxidant pigments, doesn't appear to have much to offer at first glance, but because it belongs to the cruciferous family, it's one of your healthiest options. Similarly, white mushrooms may look pretty drab, but they can provide micronutrients not found in the entire plant kingdom. We now know that certain phytonutrients bind to specific receptors and other proteins in our body. I talked about the AH broccoli receptors before. Well, there are also effectively green tea receptors in your body, that is, receptors for EGCG, a key component of green tea. There are binding proteins for the phytonutrients in grapes, onions, and capers. Recently, a cell surface receptor was even identified for a nutrient concentrated in apple peels. These specific proteins may not be activated, though, unless you eat these specific foods. The different phytonutrient profiles may then result in different clinical effects. For example, drinking tomato juice can rescue the immune function of study subjects crippled by 2 weeks of fruit and vegetable deficiency, but carrot juice apparently cannot. Even different parts of the same vegetable can have different effects. One of the reasons certain tomato products appear to be protective against heart attacks is because the yellow fluid surrounding the seeds concentrates a compound that suppresses platelet activation. Platelets are what help trigger the blood clots that can cause heart attacks and most strokes. Aspirin has a similar effect, but it doesn't work in everyone and can increase bleeding risk, 2 limitations that the tomato compound may be able to overcome. But if you only consume tomato sauce, juice, or ketchup, you may be missing out, since the seeds are removed during processing. So when picking out canned tomato products, choose whole, crushed, or diced tomatoes instead of tomato sauce, puree, or paste. Different plants may also affect the same part of the body in different ways. Consider mental function, for instance. In a study of dozens of fruits and vegetables, from raspberries to rutabagas, certain plants appear to shore up specific cognitive domains. For example, the consumption of some plant foods was associated with better executive function, perceptual speed, and semantic or fact-based memory, while the consumption of others was more consistently associated with visual spatial skills and autobiographical memory. In other words, you may need to build up a portfolio of many fruits and vegetables to cover all your bases. One of the reasons studies may underestimate the protective effects of plant foods is that they tend to measure quantity of fruit and vegetable consumption rather than quality of fruit and vegetable consumption. People are more likely to eat bananas and cucumbers than blueberries and kale. But variety is important, too. Half the fruit servings in the United States are made up of just five fruits: apples and apple juice, bananas, grapes, orange juice, and watermelon. And most vegetable servings are from canned tomatoes, potatoes, and iceberg lettuce. One of the few studies that looked specifically at the diversity of fruit and vegetable consumption, the variety of intake, was an even better predictor of decreased inflammation in the bodies of middle-aged adults than the absolute quantity of consumption. Even after removing the effects of quantity, the addition of two different types of fruits and vegetables per week has been associated with an 8% reduction in the incidence of type 2 diabetes. These kinds of data led to the American Heart Association to add a recommendation into their latest dietary guidelines to also eat a variety of fruits and vegetables. It's an important addition. Otherwise, a big bag of potato chips or one head of iceberg lettuce could technically fulfill or exceed your recommended 9 servings a day. It's better to eat a whole orange rather than take a vitamin C pill, since the pill deprives you of all the other wonderful nutrients in the oranges themselves. Well, the same principle applies when you don't diversify your fruit and vegetable consumption. By only eating apples, you also miss out on oranges' phytonutrients, right? You don't get the lemonoids and citrus like lemonin, lemonol, or tangeritin, though you may get more malic acid from the Latin malum, meaning apple. When it comes to the unique phytonutrient of each fruit and vegetable, it's like comparing apples to oranges. That's why you should mix it up. In a sense, though, all fruits are just fruits, whereas vegetables can be any other part of the plant, right? Roots may harbor different nutrients than shoots. For this reason, it may be even more important to get in a variety of vegetables, so you can benefit from all parts of the plants, as one large cancer study of nearly 500,000 people did indeed find. As a recent review concluded, quote, "Because each vegetable contains a unique combination, a great diversity of vegetables should be eaten to get all the health benefits," unquote. Variety is not only the spice of life, it may prolong it as well. A side note on eating better to look better. We've all heard of the proverbial golden glow that's often equated with health, vitality, and youth. But instead of using a tanning bed to achieve a more golden hue, you can do it with a bed of greens. There are certain animals who use diets to increase their sexual attractiveness. Great tits, distinctive olive and black songbirds, ubiquitous throughout Europe and Asia, tend to prefer carotenoid-rich caterpillars, which makes their breast plumage brighter yellow to become more attractive to potential mates. Can a similar phenomenon be found in humans? Researchers took digital photographs of African, Asian, and Caucasian men and women and asked others to manipulate the skin tone of their faces with a dial until they reached what they perceived to be the healthiest-looking color. Sure enough, both men and women preferred the yellow golden glow that can be achieved through dietary carotenoid deposition in the skin. In other words, by eating the yellow and red pigments in fruits and vegetables like beta-carotene in sweet potatoes and lycopene in tomatoes, men and women may be able to naturally acquire more of a golden and rosy glow. Researchers decided to put it to the test. Based on a 6-week study of college students, the complexion achieved by eating my daily dozen recommendation of 9 servings of fruits and vegetables a day was found to be significantly healthier and more attractive looking than that achieved by eating 3 daily servings. The healthier you eat, the healthier you look. Indeed, studies find that individuals with the lowest fruit and vegetable intake may enjoy the most improvement in their appearance. What about wrinkles? A study out of Japan used the 6-point Daniel scale to rate the extent of crow's feet wrinkles around the eyes of more than 700 women, with a score of 1 being the least severe and a score of 6 being the most severe. The researchers found that higher intake of green and yellow vegetables was associated with decreased facial wrinkling. Women who ate less than a daily serving of green and yellow veggies averaged about a 3 on the Daniel scale, while women who ate more than 2 servings a day averaged closer to a 2. The researchers celebrated the, quote, "potential for these studies to promote a healthier diet." I'm certainly not above appealing to vanity, especially for my younger patients who have seemed more interested in which dietary changes will clear their acne than which will clear their future risk of chronic disease. So I'm happy to see articles embrace these types of studies with headlines like, "Greens to be Gorgeous." Still, although looking great on the outside is fine, looking great on the inside is even better. Mushrooming benefits. Ergothionine is an unusual amino acid. Although it was discovered more than a century ago, it was ignored until recently when researchers found that humans have a transporter protein in their bodies specifically designed to pull ergothionine out of food and into body tissue. This suggests that this amino acid plays some important physiological role, but what? Our first clue was the tissue distribution. Ergothionine concentrates in parts of your body where there's lots of oxidative stress, your liver, lenses of your eyes, for example, as well as such sensitive tissues such as bone marrow and semen. Researchers guessed then that it might act as a so-called cytoprotectant, a cell protector, and that's indeed what's been subsequently found. Ergothionine appears to function as a potent intramitochondrial antioxidant, meaning it can get inside the mitochondria, the microscopic power plants within your cells. The DNA inside the mitochondria is especially vulnerable to free radical damage since many other antioxidants are unable to penetrate the mitochondrial membrane. This is one reason ergothionine may be so important. Depriving human cells of this amino acid leads to accelerated DNA damage and cell death. Unfortunately, the human body cannot make ergothionine. You can only get it through food. Because of its dietary origin and the toxicity associated with its depletion, Johns Hopkins University researchers concluded that ergothionine may, quote-unquote, represent a new vitamin. If it were classified as such, that would make it the first new vitamin since vitamin B12 was isolated back in 1948. What are the best dietary sources of ergothionine? The highest levels by far have been reported in mushrooms. For example, oyster mushrooms, which you can grow yourself in only 2 weeks with a just-add-water kit, have more than 1,000 units, micrograms per decogram, of ergothionine, about 9 times more than their closest competitor, black beans. And a serving of black beans has about 8 times more than a serving of the third leading source, chicken liver. Chicken meat, along with beef and pork, has only about 10 units, 100 times less than oyster mushroom. Kidney beans have about 4 times more than meat, but even at 47 units, they pale in comparison to some of the mushrooms. Ergothionine is heat-stable, which means it's not destroyed when mushrooms are cooked. This is good news because it's best not to eat mushrooms raw. There's a toxin in edible mushrooms called agaritin, to which you should minimize your exposure. Thankfully, the toxin is destroyed by cooking. Just 30 seconds in the microwave wipes out most agaritin in mushrooms. Freezing also gets rid of most of it, but drying does not. So if you put dried mushrooms in your soup, it's best to boil them for at least 5 minutes. Morel mushrooms are a special case. The toxin levels appear higher and may react with alcohol even after cooking. I consider all other cooked edible mushrooms to be green light foods and all other edible raw mushrooms yellow light foods. However, raw morel mushrooms, cooked morels served with alcohol, and all wild foraged mushrooms should be on the red light list, in my opinion. Do you have to eat mushrooms to be healthy? No. Otherwise, it would be the daily baker's dozen. Famously in our family, my mom has never eaten a mushroom in her life, and never will because they quote-unquote look funny. But given the potential immune and anti-cancer benefits documented earlier, I would encourage you to try to find ways to incorporate mushrooms into your diet. My favorite way to enjoy mushrooms is to grill portobellos. I picked up a George Foreman grill from my local thrift store, and my family has officially renamed it the Portobello Mushroom Grill. I know people tend to marinate portobellos first, but I just drizzle them with some balsamic vinegar, grill them until the juice starts dripping, and then add some cracked pepper. They're so good, we just eat them like that. Pop quiz: which is healthier, plain white mushrooms or portobellos? Trick question. They're the same mushroom. The little white button mushrooms grow up to be portobellos. White mushrooms are just like baby bellows. Mushrooms can be stuffed, Enjoy it in soups like mushroom barley, act as the star of a creamy risotto or pâté, serve as the base of a great gravy, or as a flavorful addition to any pasta sauce, or simply be braised with crushed garlic and red wine. Even more vegetables! My favorite way to eat raw veggies is to dip bell pepper strips, carrots, or snap peas into hummus or bean dip. My favorite way to eat them cooked is by roasting them. You know, roasting can transform vegetables into otherworldly creations. If you don't believe me, try roasting red bell peppers, Brussels sprouts, beets, or squash. And never thought you'd like okra because it's too slimy? Try it roasted. One of my favorite springtime dishes is roasted asparagus dipped in guacamole. Here's an interesting asparagus fact. Did you know that there are four types of people in the world? Those whose pee turns stinky after eating asparagus, and those who don't, and those who are apparently genetically incapable of smelling the asparagus pee odor, and finally, those who can. So some people may not think they get stinky pee from asparagus, but they actually do, and just can't smell it. Sweet potatoes are one of my favorite snacks. During harsh Boston winters, while I was in medical school, I would take two freshly microwaved sweet potatoes, pop them into my coat pockets as natural hand warmers. When they cooled down, my hand warmers became instant, healthy snacks. It's actually better to boil them, though, to best preserve their nutritional content. Regardless of your cooking method, be sure to keep on the skin. The peel of a sweet potato is nearly 10 times the antioxidant power of the inner flesh on a per-weight basis, giving them an antioxidant capacity approaching that of blueberries. Sweet potatoes themselves can be considered a superfood. They're ranked as one of the healthiest foods on the planet, and one day perhaps even off the planet. NASA has chosen them for future space missions. In fact, they're among the healthiest and cheapest, with one of the highest nutrient-rich food scores per dollar. When picking out varieties at the supermarket, remember that a sweet potato's nutritional content is tied directly to the intensity of its color. The more yellow or orange its flesh, the healthier it may be. Sweet potatoes are healthier than plain potatoes, but if you're going to choose the latter, seek out those with blue or purple flesh. The consumption of one boiled purple potato a day for 6 weeks was found to significantly decrease inflammation, something neither white or yellow potatoes were able to accomplish. The same was found for oxidation, but much faster. Within hours of consumption, purple potatoes increased the antioxidant capacity of the study's bloodstream, whereas white potato starch appeared to actually have a pro-oxidant effect. Blue potatoes may have 10 times more antioxidant power than regular white ones. The most exciting purple potato study to date had people with hypertension eat 6 to 8 microwave small purple potatoes a day, and they were able to significantly bring down their blood pressure levels within a month. Purple sweet potatoes may offer the best of both worlds. I was so excited to discover them that I bought them as holiday gifts for my family one year, stocking stuffers they could stuff themselves with. A side note on getting kids and parents to eat their veggies. Published strategies for getting kids of all ages to eat their vegetables include cutting them into slices, sticks, or stars. Stars were the most popular shape. Supposedly, putting an Elmo sticker on veggies swayed 50% of children to choose broccoli over a candy bar. If they're still not biting, though, you can apply the same trick I used to get our dog to take her pills. Dip the veggies in peanut butter. A study found that pairing vegetables with peanut butter significantly increases intake, even in quote-unquote vegetable-resistant children. Offering a salad dressing dip also has been found to help. Simply having healthy foods out and available can boost intake. Guess what happened when researchers put out bowls of cut-up fresh fruit in addition to the regular party fare brought by parents for kindergarten or preschool celebrations? No special effort was made to encourage students to choose the fruit. The researchers just put it on the table with all the other food. Would kids actually eat fruit when such foods as birthday cake, ice cream, and cheese puffs were available? Yes. On average, each kid ate a full fruit serving. Take that, cheese puffs! Even just calling vegetables by different names can help. Elementary schools were able to double vegetable consumption simply by coming up with names that better appealed to the kids. students ate twice the number of carrots if they were called X-ray vision carrots compared to when they were just carrots, or generically called the food of the day. Are adults as gullible? Apparently so. For example, grown-ups reported traditional Cajun red beans and rice tasted better than just red beans with rice, even though they were the exact same dish. When school cafeterias put out signs like Power Punch Broccoli and Silly Dilly Green Beans, or called broccoli Tiny Tasty Treetops, selection of broccoli increased by about 110%, and selection of green beans jumped up by nearly 180%. The researchers concluded that, quote, "These studies demonstrate that using attractive names to describe a healthy food in a cafeteria is robustly effective, persistent, and scalable with little or no money or experience." These names were not carefully crafted, discussed in focus groups, and then pre-tested. Right? They were just invented out of thin air. And the kids were suckered into eating healthier for weeks simply by adults putting out, you know, silly little signs. Indeed, in the school displaying these playful new names in the cafeteria line, vegetable purchasing went up nearly 100%, while in the control school without signs, vegetable purchases started low and actually got worse. So why isn't every single school in the country doing this right now? Bring it up at your next PTA meeting. And let's not forget the hide the veggies strategy. Studies have shown that broccoli, cauliflower, tomato, squash, zucchini can be added covertly to familiar entrees such that the appearance, flavor, and texture of the original recipes are maintained, like pureeing vegetables into a pasta sauce, for example. Studies found that the trick works for adults, too. Researchers were able to slip in up to a pound of clandestine vegetables a day, resulting in 350 fewer calories eaten. Surreptitiously incorporating vegetables into foods shouldn't be the only way that vegetables are served to children, though, since the appetite of an initially unappetizing vegetable can be increased through repeated exposure, it's important to use several strategies to ensure that kids experience whole vegetables. After all, they're not always going to be eating at home. One of the most important predictors of children's fruit and vegetable consumption has been found to be parents' consumption. So if you want your kids to eat healthy, it helps to be a healthy role model. The top cancer-fighting vegetables. According to a landmark American Institute for Cancer Research report, any effect of a plant-based diet is, quote, "likely to be due not only to the exclusion of meat, but also to the inclusion of a larger number and of a wider range of plant foods containing an extensive variety of potentially cancer-preventive substances," unquote. In other words, it may not be enough to cut down on meat. You need to eat as many whole, healthy plant foods as possible. Meatless Mondays are great, but even more so when followed by Tomato Tuesdays, Watercress Wednesdays, and so on. Different vegetables may target different cancers, sometimes even in the same organ. For example, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts are associated with lower risk of colon cancer in the middle and right side of your body, whereas risk of colon cancer farther down on the left side appears to be lowered more by carrots, pumpkins, and apples. An extraordinary study published in the journal Food Chemistry pitted 34 common vegetables in vitro against 8 different types of human cancer cells: breast cancer, brain tumors, kidney cancer, lung cancer, childhood brain tumors, pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, and stomach cancer. Take breast cancer, for example. 7 vegetables, eggplant, bok choy, carrots, tomatoes, endive, and fennel bulb, and romaine lettuce, appeared useless, suppressing breast cancer cell growth no more than the control. 6 vegetables, orange bell pepper, English cucumber, radicchio, jalapeno, potato, and beetroot, nearly halved cancer growth, but 5 veggies, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, green onion, leek, and garlic, abolished cancer growth completely, stopping breast tumor cells dead in their tracks. There were 2 take-home messages to come out from this remarkable study. The first is that you should eat a portfolio of vegetables. Radishes, for example, are completely unable to stop pancreatic cancer cell growth. However, radishes were 100% effective at halting the growth of stomach cancer cells. Orange bell peppers were useless against stomach cancer, but they were able to suppress prostate cancer cell growth by more than 75%. In the words of the researchers, quote, "a diversified diet containing several distinct classes of vegetables and hence of phytochemicals is essential for effective prevention of cancer." How to make a cancer-fighting salad. Imagine you're standing in line at one of those made-to-order salad places, where you get to choose your lettuce, your toppings, and your dressing. You start with the greens. For the sake of this example, let's say you were offered a choice between the five covered in the food chemistry study: Boston lettuce, endive, radicchio, romaine lettuce, and spinach. Which should you choose? Based on the study findings, spinach. Out of the five options, spinach beat out the others against breast cancer, brain tumors, kidney cancer, lung cancer, pediatric brain tumors, pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, and stomach cancer. The runner-up, radicchio. Which toppings should you add to your spinach salad? You only get five to choose from, and after consulting the Daily Dozen cheat sheet in your wallet, you can tick three checkboxes immediately: beans, berries, and nuts. Now you only have two toppings left. Out of the 32 remaining vegetables included in the study, which of the two following should you pick? Choose carefully. Here's the list: acorn, squash, asparagus, beetroot, bok choy, Boston lettuce, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, carrots, cauliflower, celery, curly cabbage, eggplant, endive, English cucumber, fennel bulb, fiddleheads, garlic, green beans, green onions, jalapeno kale, leek, orange bell peppers, potato, radicchio, radish, red cabbage, romaine lettuce, rutabagas, tomatoes, or yellow onions. Which two did you choose? If one of your choices was Brussels sprouts, cabbage, curly cabbage, or kale, and the other choice was garlic, green onions, or leeks, you get a gold star. Of all the vegetables tested, those had the most cancer-preventing potential. Notice anything they have in common? All the top choices belong to one of only two superfood families, cruciferous vegetables and the allium veggie family, which includes garlic and onions. As the researchers put it, quote, "The inclusion of cruciferous and allium vegetables in the diet is essential for effective dietary-based chemo-preventive or cancer-preventing strategies," unquote. Note that the most common vegetables didn't make the cut. Quote, "The majority of the vegetable extracts tested in the study, including vegetables that are commonly consumed in Western countries such as potatoes, carrots, lettuce, and tomatoes," researchers concluded, quote, "had little effect on the proliferation of tumor cell lines," unquote. The single most effective vegetable was garlic, which came in first against breast cancer, both child and adult, brain cancer, lung cancer, pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, and stomach cancer, and second after leeks against kidney cancer. So, might I suggest a garlicky salad dressing like the one I mentioned before? Garlic and onions. As the before-mentioned salad illustrates, garlic, onions, leeks, and other vegetables in the allium family appear to have special properties. Wait a second, though. I mean, like chemotherapy, maybe garlic isn't just toxic to cancer cells, but toxic to all cells. That wouldn't be good. Researchers also wondered about this, so they decided to compare the effects of garlic and other vegetables on the growth of both cancer cells and normal cells. The same garlic dose that blocked nearly 80% of cancer cell proliferation appeared to have no effect whatsoever against normal cells, and similar results were found for the other allium and cruciferous vegetables. In other words, vegetables are selective. They destroy cancer cells but leave normal cells alone. These results were seen in a petri dish, though, and while such studies may have direct relevance for digestive tract cancers that come in close contact with these foods, for these foods to be protective against other cancers, the anti-cancer compounds would have to be absorbed into the bloodstream. In the case of brain tumors, the anti-cancer compounds would additionally have to cross the blood-brain barrier. The findings do seem in sync with other studies, though, both among human populations and in other laboratories, that corroborate the cancer-fighting benefits of cruciferous vegetables, garlic, and onions. Regardless, this study illustrates the dramatic differences between the biological capacities of individual vegetables and families of veggies, and underscores the importance of including a variety of vegetables in your diet. Which is the best cooking method? Is it better to eat your vegetables raw or cooked? If you're thinking raw, you're right. But if you're thinking cooked, you're also right. Confused? Well, a number of nutrients, like vitamin C, are partially destroyed by cooking. For example, steamed broccoli may have about 10% less vitamin C than raw broccoli. If, however, you prefer cooked broccoli enough to eat 7 florets of steamed rather than 6 florets of raw, then you just more than made up the difference. Other nutrients, however, actually become more absorbable after cooking. For example, you end up with more than 6 times the vitamin A in your bloodstream from cooked carrots compared to raw ones. A study of long-term raw food has found surprisingly low blood levels of the red antioxidant pigment lycopene. It's not what you eat, but what you absorb, and cooked tomatoes appear better able to boost your lycopene levels. Steaming may also improve the bile acid binding capacity of vegetables, which may help lower breast cancer risk. Raw food diets automatically eliminate most red and yellow light foods, which is not only an improvement over the standard American diet, but also over many plant-based diets. There's no evidence to suggest, however, that eating raw foods largely or exclusively is healthier than eating a combination of cooked and raw whole plant foods. Some cooking methods, though, are preferable to others. Deep-fried foods, whether of plant origin, like French fries, or from animals, like fried chicken, have been associated with higher cancer risk. Deep-frying leads to the production of dangerous heterocyclic amines in meat and to acrylamide in deep-fried plant foods. The excess lifetime cancer risk attributable to the consumption of French fries in young children, for example, may be as high as 1 or 2 in 10,000, meaning about 1 in 10,000 boys and girls eating French fries may develop cancer that would have otherwise not occurred had they not eaten French fries. The researchers urge deep fryer cooking times and temperatures to be set as low as possible, quote, while still maintaining a tasty quality. They wouldn't want to reduce cancer so much that the deep-fried foods wouldn't be as tasty, of course. Blanching potatoes first can reduce acrylamide formation, but potato chip companies argue that that might have a negative impact on, quote, the nutritional properties of the fried product, because it would leach away some of the vitamin C. But if you're relying on potato chips to get your vitamin C, acrylamide is probably the least of your worries. What's the best way to cook vegetables to preserve nutrition? I'm often asked this question. It's difficult to answer, as it varies for different vegetables. What we would need is a study that measures a variety of different cooking methods with a variety of different vegetables. Thankfully, we got exactly that in 2009. A Spanish research team pulled out all the stops, performing more than 300 separate experiments with 20 vegetables and 6 cooking methods, all while considering 3 different measures of antioxidant activity. They tested baking, boiling, frying, griddling, which is cooking on a thick frying pan with no oil, microwaving, and pressure cooking. Let's start with the worst methods in terms of antioxidant loss, boiling and pressure cooking. When you use these wet cooking methods, some of the nutrition is lost in the cooking water, but less than I would have thought. For instance, researchers found that boiling removes an average of 14% of the vegetable's antioxidant capacity. So if you like your corn on the cob boiled, you could just add an extra quarter ear to the pot. 6 quarters boiled has all the antioxidant power of 5 quarters raw, baked or microwaved. Of the 6 cooking methods studied, griddling and microwaving were actually the gentlest. Nuking your veggies appears to preserve, on average, more than 95% of antioxidant capacity. Now, those are averages across 20 vegetables. Some vegetables are more resistant, and antioxidant power actually increases with cooking in other veggies. Which do you think was the most vulnerable vegetable, that is, the one probably best eaten raw? If you guessed bell peppers, you're right. They've been shown to lose up to 70% of their antioxidant capacity when baked in the oven. Now, I'm going to continue to roast my peppers because of how much I love the taste, but I realize I'm getting less nutritional bang for my buck. No biggie, though, because I could just add an extra sprinkle of oregano to my roasted red pepper pasta sauce and make up for it. On the other hand, 3 vegetables hardly seem to be affected at all by cooking: artichokes, beets, and onions. You can even boil them, and they'll still retain 97.5% of their antioxidant power. Finally, there are 2 vegetables that may actually become healthier through cooking: the humble carrot and the celery stalk. No matter how you prepare them, even by boiling, carrots and celery appear to gain in antioxidant power. Green beans get an honorable mention because they increase in antioxidant power when cooked by all methods except boiling or pressure cooking. Microwaved green beans, for example, have more antioxidants than raw. So, Go ahead and make a nice vegetable soup and boost the ingredients' antioxidant content at the same time. A side note on how to make your own fruit and vegetable wash. Buying organic foods reduces your exposure to pesticides, but it doesn't eliminate them entirely. Pesticide residues have been detected in 11% of organic crop samples due to accidental or fraudulent use, cross-contamination from neighboring non-organic fields, or the lingering presence of persistent pollutants like DDT in the soil. There are many commercial fruit and vegetable wash products that purport to improve the removal of pesticides, but a variety have been tested and appear to be a complete waste of money. For example, Procter & Gamble had a product that claimed it was proven to be 98% more effective than water in removing pesticides. When it was put to the test, though, it did no better than plain tap water. Rinsing produce under running water generally removes less than half of the pesticide residues. Fingernail polish remover acetone bath has been found to be more effective at removing pesticides, but of course I'm not advocating dunking your fruits and veggies in that. The goal is to make your tomato less toxic. One effective method is to use a 5% acetic acid bath, in other words, plain white vinegar, which has been found to remove the bulk of certain pesticide residues, but 5%, that's full strength, and it would get expensive buying gallons of white vinegar just to wash your fruits and veggies. Unfortunately, a diluted white vinegar bath only seems marginally more effective than tap water. Thankfully, there's a solution that's both cheap and effective, salt water. A 10% salt water rinse has been found to work as well as full strength vinegar. To make your own pesticide-reducing bath, add 1 part salt to 9 part water. Just make sure to rinse off all the salt before eating. Is buying organic worth it? Stroll down the produce aisle of your grocery store. You'll see lots of foods labeled organic, but what does that really mean? According to the USDA, organic farming practices preserve the environment and avoid most synthetic materials, including pesticides and antibiotics. Among other requirements, organic farmers must receive annual on-site inspections, use only USDA-approved materials, and not use genetically modified crops. In order to be counted among the $35 billion U.S. organic retail market, products receive a USDA organic stamp. The fact is, being organic does not mean a food is healthy. The organic food industry didn't become so lucrative by selling carrots. For instance, you can now buy pesticide-free potato chips and organic jelly beans. There are even organic Oreo cookies. Junk food is still junk food, even if it was produced organically. The organic label cannot turn red lights green. Many are surprised to learn, I know I was, that a review of hundreds of studies found that organic produce does not seem to have significantly more vitamins and minerals. Organic fruits and vegetables do, however, appear to have more non-traditional nutrients like those polyphenol antioxidants, thought to be because conventionally grown plants given high-dose synthetic nitrogen fertilizers may divert more resources to growth rather than defense. This may be why, as we heard before, organic berries appear to suppress cancer growth better than conventional berries in vitro. Based on its elevated antioxidant levels, organic produce may be considered 20 to 40% healthier, the equivalent of adding 1 or 2 servings worth to a 5-a-day regimen. But organic produce may be 40% more expensive, so for the same money, you could just buy an extra servings worth of conventional produce. From a purely nutrients per dollar standpoint, it's not clear that organic foods are any better, but people don't just buy organic foods because they're healthier. What about safety? Conventional produce appears to have twice the levels of cadmium, one of the 3 toxic heavy metals in the food supply, along with mercury and lead. The cadmium is thought to come from the phosphate fertilizers that are added to conventional crops. The greatest concern most people have about conventionally grown produce, though, is the pesticide residues. People not only tend to overestimate the nutritional benefit of organic foods, they also overestimate the risks of pesticides. For example, surveys have found that many consumers erroneously believe that just as many people die from pesticide residues on conventional food as they do from automobile accidents, or that eating non-organic produce is almost as bad as smoking a daily pack of cigarettes. I mean, this kind of thinking is dangerous, as it could lead to a decrease in overall fruit and vegetable consumption. If just half of the U.S. population were to increase fruit and vegetable consumption by a single serving per day, An estimated 20,000 cancer cases might be avoided each year. Now, this estimate was calculated using conventional produce, so the additional pesticide burden from all that extra produce might be expected to cause 10 new cancer cases. So on balance, the study suggested, if half of Americans ate one more serving of produce per day, we'd only prevent 19,990 people from becoming cancer patients every year. Sounds good to me. Now, unfortunately, that paper was written by scientists for hire, paid for by conventional produce growers, so they had an incentive to exaggerate the benefits and downplay the risks. Nevertheless, I think the bottom line is sound, right? You receive tremendous benefit from eating conventional fruits and vegetables that far outweighs whatever little bump in risk you get from the pesticides. But why accept any risk at all when you can choose organic? My own family buys organic whenever we can, but we never let concern about pesticides stop us from stuffing our faces with as many fruits and vegetables as possible. At least half your plate should be filled with vegetables. Here's a simple rule, right? Include vegetables in everything, and the more the better, right? Bean burritos, better than carnitas, but better still is a bean burrito with lots of veggies wrapped inside. Instead of spaghetti with marinara sauce, make it spaghetti with marinara sauce with loads of veggies on top. Marinara is certainly better than Alfredo, but it's even better still to go the extra veggie mile and heap on your favorite vegetables.